When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready.
Ready.
Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception, Reception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Coe, Matt Harmon here with you, listening to Reception, Perception, the show. All right, Matt, we are really winding down the season here, but they're not going to let us go quietly into the night, my friend. I mean, shoot, we've got major benchings across the NFL. We're going to talk about Kirk Cousins. We're going to talk about Jameis Winston. And we're going to talk about some very high-profile wide receiver cornerback matchups as well. I don't know, man. Is there something you're really looking forward to? Again, as we had talked about off air, this being the last real, real week of the NFL before the holidays start to kick in.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the last real week of at least on my on my Yahoo schedule. It's my last five show week, that whole deal. Next week things get funky, bro, where we've got games on Wednesday on Christmas. Yep, obviously we got a Thursday game, we got the final Thursday night game, we got a full day on Saturday, a full day on Sunday, and then a Monday night football game. It's beautiful that people's fantasy football championships will be, you know, decided week 17 with all of these games, a lot of island games here. So your people are going to be doing a lot of sweating, but that means that we got a lot of good football to watch, which ultimately is a really good thing. I wonder if you know, I always joke that I never really watched a lot of college football during the season, and I know a lot of people are pissed about this NFL scheduling because they're interrupting a lot of these college football playoff games.
True.
Essentially, if I wanted to, and I do kind of want to, I could watch football from the entire 1 p.m. to end of game window on Saturday and Sunday. I wonder if my wife's going to let me get away with that. We'll see.
Oy. Well, that'll be interesting for sure. Yeah, man, we got games all up and down the board here. It's going to be a lot of fun. Okay, but again, last night, we're recording this on a Wednesday. On Tuesday night, Kirk Cousins was benched. A surprising move, I think, for a lot of folks. I also think that it's kind of a smart move, honestly, if we're being honest here, by the Atlanta Falcons to bench Kirk Cousins, going with a rookie, a top 10 pick, and Michael Penix Jr. But man, what was your initial, thought behind Kirk Cousins getting benched?
Well, my initial thought, Kirk Cousins getting benched, was this had to happen. It just had to be done.
Wow.
Okay. Had to be done. Had to be done. So the one thing that's interesting really about this benching is that, unlike the next one that we're going to talk about with Jameis and, you know, the Browns benching him for DTR, the Browns season it's been over, right, for a long time. I know.
So. Yeah,
we've talked about the Browns on this show because Jameis Winston obviously pumping up some of the receivers, and we'll talk about that on the inverse here. But they're ultimately an irrelevant team. They're not going anywhere. They're just playing out the string of their season. That's not the case with the Falcons. The Falcons.
No.
are still squarely in contention for a playoff spot. They're still trying to win their division. Embarrassing that they might lose their division to a team that they've beaten twice in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but that's right. Just how bad things have gotten in Atlanta. They have an island game in week 17 on Sunday Night Football against the Commanders, another NFC, you know, hopeful in terms of the postseason. So yeah, this is a team that's still squarely in the mix. And this is not just like a, all right, our season's over, let's get a look at the rookie type thing. Like this is a, we're not getting good enough play out of our quarterback, then, and we've got to try the other option here. A lot of things to discuss with this move. We can obviously talk about it all the way back at like why they decided to take Michael Penix. But the reason I think it had to be done is, again, I just don't think they were getting nearly good enough play out of Kirk Cousins. And James, his season has kind of gone like this. You know, it started really low. Remember how freaked out we were after what we saw in week one?
Horrible.
And then, you know, kind of the midpoint of the season, he started to spike a little bit.
Yeah.
And then really these last few weeks, it's just been a total downturn. I mean, how many teams beat the Atlanta Falcons on Monday night besides the Raiders? You know, like how many, if it's any other team playing them on Monday night, they probably lose that game. I mean, the Raiders are just not an NFL team right now. They're so banged up and they weren't good to begin with.
Right.
So I just think that what Cousins has been giving them, and really, by the way, James, if you take out the two games that Kirk has played against the Bucs, you know, one of the most generous secondaries in the league.
Right.
They play a specific type of zone coverage that Kirk is just able to diagnose really well. He doesn't have to move around out of the pocket. It's type of defense he's seen forever. Identify the blitz. There's the open hole in the zone. Boom, get it out. He has like 10 touchdowns to 15 interceptions on the year,
Ooh.
A sub 80 passer rating, and 5.5 net yards per attempt. Like I said, that's just not good enough for a team that is trying to win in trying to get a playoff spot right now.
In week five against Tampa Bay, 509 passing yards for Kirk Cousins, 4 touchdowns and 1 interception. That doesn't even seem like this season, honestly. Yeah. I mean, 509 yards for Kirk Cousins, that doesn't even, what we have seen
over the last, a franchise record breaking performance for
right, a team that has had Mike Vick and Matt Ryan at quarterback. 509 yards. Are you kidding me? That does not even seem possible. Does not seem possible in this season, what we have seen over the last 4 weeks. And again, in the second game against Tampa Bay, 276 through the air, 4 touchdowns, no interception. So eight touchdowns, 1 interception against Tampa Bay. And as you mentioned, 10 versus 15 touchdown interception ratio against everybody else. Can I give you some interesting stats here that I kind of looked into? In regards to Kirk Cousins, and I agree with you, it's a move that, look, from a financial standpoint, makes no sense, and from an off-season maneuvering standpoint, team building, I don't think this makes much sense, and so that kind of muddies the water, right? Like,
sure.
If you were to take finances and draft capital and off-season, like all that stuff, if you took all that out and just said, okay, these are the guys that are on the field, then it becomes, as you mentioned, pretty clear. It's just, it's really hard to divorce yourself of those things. But when I do take a look at some of these numbers, Matt, and I think you might be interested in this, where Kirk really struggled was in the intermediate area of the field. I'm talking between 10 to 19 air yards downfield. Now, I do believe that these throws, more so than deep throws, require some serious arm strength, because you got to put these on a rope, a lot of these throws, right? Like, you got to put some real serious, you know, power behind these throws. It might surprise some people, Matt, but downfield, his downfield numbers, even in the last 5 or 6 weeks, have actually been really, really good. But it's this intermediate area where he's literally the worst quarterback in the NFL by far. He's thrown a league-worst 7 picks to the intermediate area since week number 11. He's dead last in EPA on these throws by a million miles. Negative 20.6 total EPA when we're talking about throws to the middle of the field or to the intermediate area of the field. And yeah, 40% completion rate to the intermediate area of the field since week 11. That is the second worst in the NFL. Are you curious to know who is right there with them in terms of how bad they are to the intermediate area?
Obviously, I am curious.
It would be one Mr. Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is only completing 29% of his passes to the intermediate area of the field, Matt. This is a team with Garrett Wilson and Davante Adams. He's only completing 29%. He's also second worst in EPA at -6.5. But yeah, not
what
a good
do we always
here.
Say with Rodgers? Not a touchdown to check down, baby.
Which is just, it doesn't make sense because, I mean, tell me I'm wrong here, but you know, in his prime, he was fantastic in this area of the field. So I don't, yeah. Dude, I don't know, man. 29% completion rate for Aaron Rodgers to intermediate area of the field when you're throwing a Davante Adams and Garrett Wilson. What is going on? But I want to kind of pick your brain on this because, okay, so like I said, Kirk Cousins statistically has just been freaking awful to the intermediate area of the field. Can you talk about where does Drake London win when we're talking about route charts and all that kind of stuff?
Are you able to split any of this up by like middle of the field versus like outside?
Yeah, I could give me some. I'll get to it.
Yeah, because what makes me curious about that is that, and people can go find this breakdown I did on YouTube with this. One of the reasons I thought that Cousins and Drake London in this offense just made so much sense is that these are the throws that those intermediate middle of the field throws and some vertical throws as well were really like the bread and butter Kirk Cousins throws. And I think that it's actually interesting that we connect these two quarterbacks, the older post-Achilles right. quarterbacks, because I think when you watch Rodgers, Cousins is maybe a different conversation, but also by the way, Rodgers a much, much more physically talented quarterback at his peak versus right. Cousins at his individual peak. I think when you watch Rodgers play, we just broke down like recently on the show, his last two games, he's been playing like a top five quarterback. He still clearly has a lot of zip on the ball. Like he can still spin it and he can still throw it. He just can't move when he gets off platform and he can't really drive the ball into some of these windows. With Kirk, we've talked about this a lot. The man zone splits for him. And I think that's where a lot of this stuff that the ball has just been getting there so late. And I think he has made a lot of mental mistakes too, that those windows have closed very quickly. But that's why I'm curious about the middle of the field stuff, because I thought that would really be where Cousins and Drake London especially found a lot of success, would be that intermediate middle of the field. And I don't know if you have the numbers on that at all, but it's to me, that's interesting that he's been so poor in the intermediate area.
Pulling it up right now, Kirk Cousins is, when you're taking a look at completion percentage, still 41% to the intermediate middle of the field, a -18% in terms of completion rate over expected. A total EPA has been -18, which is, again, dead last in the NFL. None of these numbers look good. And as a matter of fact, six of those seven interceptions that I talked about came while throwing to the intermediate middle of the field. This is all from week 11 and on. So yeah, he has truly, I mean, some of the other quarterbacks here that we're taking a look at that are poor in this regard, when you're taking a look at like quarterback rating. I mean, he's dead last in quarterback rating, but it's guys like Tommy DeVito, Desmond Ridder, Drew Locke, Aiden O'Connell is in this mix, right? And of course, Aaron Rodgers is somehow mixed into this as well. Jay Kane or Tim Boyle also in here too. But,
these names, James.
None of it is good. None of it is good. And so, yeah, to your point, you know, again, if it's Jay Kaner doing this, if it's Sam Howell doing this, if it's Aiden O'Connell, obviously everyone would be like, yo, what are we doing out here? We got to go get Michael Penix into the mix. And really, truly, honestly, this kind of sort of is where Kirk Cousins is living right now, which is crazy.
Yeah, and that's why it just comes back to what I said before, that I think it had to be done. Because, yeah, if you're getting Tim Boyle, Jay Kaner type play in the area that your offense needs to attack,
right,
that's what this attack is based off of. The whole point of like Drake London, why it was so great having him paired with this offensive system, is that he then becomes like more of a Puka Nacua usage player, right, as opposed to the pure perimeter X receiver stuff that we saw him doing in the first 2 years of his career in Arthur Smith's offense. Well, that just all becomes completely neutralized when your quarterback can't get to the top of the drop, plant the foot, and push it between these zones over the middle. And I think that's really where we've seen the biggest drop off with Cousins here. To me, the Michael Penix pick only makes sense. And I am, I am not saying that anything that happened with the Falcons quarterback situation was correct or like I'm endorsing this. I think this is smart. I do think it's smart to just take shots at quarterback, right? Because it's the most important position in sports. And if you get one right, like I said this on my show today, if Michael Penix is good, nobody's going to give a shit about Kirk Cousins' dead money in, in like 365 days from now. Nobody's going to care. Nobody cares about the Broncos' dead cap with Russell Wilson. You don't see anybody talking about that anymore, do you?
That's great.
Because Bo Nix is playing pretty good quarterback for them, and they're probably going to go to the playoffs. No one cares about that stuff. And I mean, the next time I feel bad for a billionaire making a bad, you know, $100 million purchase will be the first time. Okay. So I don't care about that. It only makes sense though for them to take Penix, in my opinion, if basically like the plan all along from the end of the season, we're hiring a new coach and we're going to get Kirk Cousins. Like that is established. No matter what, they're going to do that. I don't think that's good process, but I think that's how this happened. I think from ownership on down, we're sick of this like Desmond Ridder, Marcus Mariota, you know, wheel of nonsense we're doing at the quarterback position. We're going to go get a real adult in the room at quarterback. Then they get Kirk in the building and they say, uh-oh. It looks like that. It looks like Jake Haner, Tim Boyle zone in the middle of the field. We gotta have a backup plan in place. Then it makes sense. Like, okay, we're taking Penix at eight. And I mean, again, that's also divorcing yourself of where Penix was maybe going to go and rank and et cetera, all that stuff. But just simply like taking a first round quarterback in the top 10, that would be the only place that it makes sense to me. I never thought we're on the Aaron Rodgers, Jordan Love plan. I don't buy that for a second because Kirk Cousins is not prime Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, Michael Penix, by the way, is like 25 years old or whatever. So like that never made sense to me. So I'm interested to see what Penix does in this offense, man. And we can talk about where he fits with the receivers and things like that. But certainly we're going to get, I think we're probably introducing some more volatility. I say that in some sense with the rookie quarterback, but at the same time, if you just got to look back at like Darnell Mooney's last 2 weeks in the box score and know there was already an awful lot of volatility for these wide receivers, 140 yards against the Vikings, zero against the Raiders. So maybe the volatility was already present there with this version of Kirk.
So actually, it's fun to kind of go back now, too. And remember, I know this is a wide receiver show, but I do want people to recall that we have a full breakdown of all of the top quarterback prospects coming into this draft on the website as well. Sleeper King, or excuse me, receptionperception.com. My goodness.
Sleeper King, also a good website people should check out.
Yes, you should also check that one out. But receptionperception.com, and they've got we have a full breakdown here of Michael Penix Jr., written by the great Derek Klassen. But yeah, I just kind of want to break this one down here, Matt, with you. So when you're taking a look at what this guy does in the, you know, middle of the field, there's just not a lot to like right now. And to be honest with you, while some evaluators have certainly extolled the virtues of Michael Penix's downfield ability and downfield accuracy, don't put, you know, Derek Klassen into that bucket, because he just wasn't that impressed with the accuracy of Penix down the field. And then just the measurable, you know, accuracy to the middle of the field, none of it looks good. You know, he was below prospect average on the dig, curl, and slant. These are all in-breaking routes here for Michael Penix Jr. And to be honest with you, he had a good collegiate group of wide receivers, and I emphasize collegiate because it's been a very mixed bag professionally for those three wide receivers. But I don't know, your thoughts here on, I don't know, when you take a look at the success rates here on the website for Michael Penix Jr., how is this all going to work out, man?
Yeah, well, I think the one thing that's for sure, and I'm sure Derek would agree with this, even like apart from the charting profile, I think Penix does have a pretty live arm. Like, I think he can drive the ball.
Yes.
And like, there's no question he's going to be able to do that. My buddy Charles McDonald at Yahoo said that like Michael Penix would have been the number one overall pick in like 1990, you know, because he's totally. Just kind of like a
yes, he's a throwback, baby.
Despite the fact that you know, he had like a great 40 time He was never really a rushing threat in college. Like that never. Wasn't really a part of his game. I don't know. Maybe he will be as a pro because of that 40 time or something like that. But we just never saw it. That wasn't really what he did in college. He was more of just a straight drop back passer that pushed it down the field. And I mean, that's probably what I'm expecting here from him over the middle. It could be definitely a little bit more, you know, that might be where we don't see him and some of these guys connect. But I will note that, like, obviously in the prospect profile for Penix, we see him have a really good success rate on out routes and comebacks. That's where I think he's going to be a little bit different than Kirk, where he's going to be getting the ball to these guys on like deeper out breaking patterns, specifically Drake London, who I don't think has really been activated that way by Kirk Cousins, but 88% success rate on out routes last year, 63 on corner routes. These are really good numbers for him. I think that's where him and Penix could be a pretty interesting overlap there. And I'd also note too that Darnell Mooney, we've talked about this on the show previously too. He surprised me with some of his deeper out breaking patterns, and interesting enough, like him and Kirk during kind of the good portions of Kirk's season has had some success on some of those deeper out breaking patterns. So it is tough to just completely, like, we talk about this all the time, like, oh, why don't they just have him run a different route tree? Pretty hard to do that, you know, certainly 16 weeks into the NFL season. Like, they're not just going to completely change one of these guys' route trees, but maybe we see more attempts on those patterns for a guy like Drake London, more balls going his way for a guy like Drake London on some of those patterns, as opposed to what we've seen a lot with him and Kirk Cousins, which is the short stuff over the middle of the field where he's been kind of a chain mover. We've seen him make some plays on balls downfield as well, but I'd say that's probably more of a Penix thing than it is a Cousins thing.
Yeah, like I said, the profile for Penix is really interesting when you really dive into some of these numbers too. So again, remember, just go to the website at receptionperception.com. It's just such interesting stuff. I mean, he's throwing curls at a high rate. He's throwing slants at almost a negligible rate. Only 8.5 of his pass attempts were slants. That's insane. That's crazy to me. And 15% of his passing attempts were on the 9 route, which, again, if you watch a lot of UW, that doesn't surprise you. This guy was sitting back there and launching all day long. But, Matt, you know, the last thing I'll say about Penix, and we'll move on, is I also give credit to the coaching staff here, because I think they could have actually made the move in week 15, but I think they wanted to give the a little veteran deference to be like, all right, we're playing Las Vegas. These guys stink. If Kirk can light it up, maybe we go the rest of the way. He did not light it up by any stretch of the imagination. But it's a pretty soft landing spot, honestly, if we're looking at the remainder of the schedule here for the Atlanta Falcons, the Giants this week, which again, it's a wonderful matchup against the Giants. They give up a lot of production over the top. Michael Penix likes to go big game hunting. I think it could be a perfect marriage. Then he goes to on the road against Washington. It's again, they've played a lot better, Matt, but certainly it's not one of the tougher matchups on the board. And then they close out the season against Carolina, and they have a lot of trouble on the outside perimeter as well when we're talking about defense. So these three games that Michael Penix has in front of him, if it really is Penix the rest of the way, coaching staff, I think, looked at the schedule and said, you know what, man, I think he can do it against these three teams.
I think so. By the way, I loved it in Derek Klassen's profile. He called him a classic Bruce Arians quarterback. That's perfect.
That is perfect.
It's perfect. And yeah, I do think that there is a little bit of to go to the Rams analogy of all this. And obviously these guys, Zach Robinson, Raheem Morris, they come from the Rams, you know, so it's hard to separate the two. I think what they're hoping is that Michael Penix is like their Matthew Stafford, right? Like, okay, they're kind of running a little bit of, I mean, it didn't really work out this way because Kirk Cousins couldn't move, but I think they probably thought like, all right, we'll run a lot of the outside. They've run a lot of outside zone, but they haven't run like any play action off of it because of the inability. I mean, shoot. Kirk was like not able to get the handoff on some of these outside stretch runs on Monday. Like it was that bad, but I think they're hoping that just like, you know, maybe they were hoping this happened in 2025, but like, okay, we drop Penix in here and it opens up the ceiling of the offense. But I do think that can happen here in the final 3 weeks of the season. I love your point about, I mean, the Giants matchup this week. I mean, my guy Rashad Bateman was tearing up the Giants secondary down the field. Exactly. You think like Drake London, Darnell Mooney can't do that? I definitely think so. Feel really good about the matchup for these guys. Mm-hmm. Again, there was already going to be volatility for these receivers with Kirk Cousins under center. I at least like the potential upside of a guy like Michael Penix coming in here. And, you know, yeah, I think at the very least, like, I do think it's a little bit of a long shot that this team can, because the Bucs have a pretty decent schedule down the stretch too. Like, we should probably be assuming that the Bucs will get the fourth seed, win the NFC South, the whole deal, and Atlanta will miss the playoffs. So, like, why not just start getting Michael Penix reps, start getting him in-game communication in a pretty good situation too. Like, this offensive line isn't bad. This running game is obviously great. Yeah. The defense stinks. We're going to get two, like, wild man quarterbacks, Drew Lock and Michael Penix, just throwing haymakers all over the field on
love
Sunday.
It,
so it could be a weird, interesting, beautifully bad shootout game for fantasy. But yeah, I mean, I just get him reps now in what is a pretty decent situation with a good supporting cast. And I think there's a chance, even if we have questions about Penix as a player, that this can be an immediate upgrade for the offense. My last question to you, James, is,
yeah,
what happens to Kirk now? You know,
it's a great question. I mean, they can't, I guess you could eat all that dead money, man, but, and just say, well, listen, it's just going to the quarterback position, right? Cause they're getting Penix on the cheap. Right. And Kirk Cousins, obviously, they overspent. And but if they were to cut him, man, it's just so much dead money. But I think Kirk, to be honest with you, I think with a lot of quarterbacks, I don't think you could keep them on the roster. You know what's funny? I think Kirk Cousins is the one veteran, like, good quarterback that you could actually keep on the roster and just say, hey, listen, man, like, we love you, man, but we want to give the young kid a chance. Can you do us a solid? And we're going to pay you all this money, but can you just be a good mentor to him? I could see that. Like, I think that's in the realm of possibility. Like, that's not happening with Rodgers or, you know, a lot of these other, you know, veteran guys. Like, it's just not going to happen. But with Kirk Cousins, I don't know, man. What do you think, dude? You think he could actually sit back there and say, all right, you know what? Fine. Pay me all this cash. It's all good. I'll be a mentor.
The reason I think, there's two reasons why I think that won't happen. One is that, I mean, Cousins was pretty peeved about this right away. You know,
yeah, they didn't tell him about the pick. Yep, exactly, all that stuff. Yeah,
I don't think he will be too willing now that he's been, you know, benched in pretty embarrassing fashion. Even if we're all saying he deserved it, it's still an embarrassing way for this to end for Kirk Cousins. I don't think he's gonna be all that jazzed about, like, yeah, let me help out the Falcons here and not make this a thing. The other reason is that I think someone will be desperate enough to trade for Kirk Cousins in the offseason. Now, I think it might take a little bit of, like, you know, kind of the Brock Osweiler situation. Remember when the Browns,
when,
like, basically
a bunch of the money,
bought a draft pick? Like, maybe someone would be willing to do that here. But, I mean, just look at all of these teams that need a quarterback solution. I'm thinking about the Raiders. I'm thinking about the Giants. I'm thinking about the Jets. I'm thinking about the Tennessee Titans, the Cleveland Browns. They definitely are going to need something. I mean, there's a lot of teams where I think that are going to be looking for quarterback, and they're not going to find them all at the top of the draft. There's just going to be some open chairs here. So could a team like, I mean, I know the Jets are funny just because they're probably looking to get out of the Rodgers situation.
Maybe
they're like a Derek Carr type team or something like that. Sure. But I just think that one of these teams is going to be desperate enough for quarterback that, like, they might be willing to basically do what the Falcons just did, which is get Kirk Cousins and a rookie and maybe, like, see if Kirk can hold down the fort for a little bit. I'd be a little surprised if he's back with the Falcons next year.
Yeah, I'm looking around. You're saying that there's some moving chairs. There definitely are some. And this is a weak quarterback class too, by the way. There's only a couple guys that are probably worth a top 10 pick, and Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders. I don't know. You know how this machine works, though. The quarterback machine, it's going to generate hype on some kid, you know. There'll be some kid who rockets up the draft board. I mean, shoot. I mean, Patrick Mahomes wasn't even considered a first rounder, and then the guy went in the top 10. It happens every single year. Anyways, there's not, I mean, there are some places, but it starts getting a little bit dicey. I don't know. We'll see. Anyways, interesting stuff. What a breakdown here of this move here in Atlanta. Another team that made a lot of, you know, went kind of underreported, honestly, is the fact that Jameis got benched. Dorian Thompson-Robinson is now the starter. Matt, I looked at some of this guy's stats, and I was just
Sorry.
Flabbergasted. I mean, shocked. Okay. I mean, here's the thing. I don't understand how you have, how these are your two options. They're polar opposites. Generally, when you have backup quarterbacks, like, you want them to do similar-ish type things to your starter. You know what I'm saying? And you couldn't ask for two guys that are more different than Jameis Winston and DTR, man. It's crazy. Can I just give you one stat here? On the season, Dorian Thompson-Robinson has 34 pass attempts on the season. He is averaging minus 1.03 air yards per attempt. Now, again, if you're not familiar or baptized in the religion of air yards, understand that basically what we are saying here is that on average, across 34 pass attempts, he is throwing behind the line of scrimmage on every single pass. That is nuts. I've never seen that in my life. I've never seen that. Minus air yards for a quarterback?
Running back, you know?
That's what I mean. Like that,
typically the running back has minus air yards on his targets because he's getting passes like behind the line of scrimmage and screens and things like that.
Crazy. Crazy, crazy stuff. Meanwhile, Jameis Winston, by the way, for comparison, he averages over 6 air yards per attempt. He has the third highest air yards per attempt in the NFL. So, again, I don't understand how you go from this guy, vertical aerial attack, to this guy, DTR, who, again, on the season, 34 pass attempts. I know it's small sample size, but that's still a full game's worth of pass attempts to be a negative air yards guy. I can't make sense of it.
Oh, you mean to say that the Browns quarterback position hasn't been completely smoothly managed or handled in recent years? You mean to say that there might be some competing forces as to what this team wants under center? Yeah, I mean, first I'm hearing of this, James Coe. Yeah, I mean, I think DTR probably profiles as a Watson type of quarterback, theoretically, where it's spread things out, you know, and sort of pick apart matchups and things like that. And there's, I think DTR brings a little bit more mobility. Watson has never really brought much mobility to the Browns. But again, the theory of Deshaun Watson, maybe DTR fits as the backup in like the theory of the Deshaun Watson play, that whole deal. Whereas Winston, I think, fits the Flacco mold. And I think that he's a little bit on the other end where he's even more aggressive and even more prone to mistakes than a guy like Joe Flacco is at this point in his career. He makes more mental errors from like a coverage standpoint, or just, I don't even know what it is with Winston, man. He just can't help himself. He truly cannot help himself.
I mean, he's over here asking God.
Oh, I was going to help him say, he said he's praying to the Lord to deliver him from pick sixes. Well, I mean, the Lord did not answer.
No, that is, no, he did not.
He's got other, the Lord's got other things to deal with. It's Christmas time, you know. People are praying for all kind of things, and Jameis Winston's prayers to be delivered from pick sixes have gone unanswered. And they've gone unanswered his entire career. So none of that is surprising. It's amazing. The only thing that I think is surprising is that anybody would be surprised that this is how this has ended for Jameis, because Jameis is so fun to watch. I mean, we will all never forget the Broncos game, you know, and just how crazy that was. But you know what he did at the end of the game? He threw the effing game away with an interception. He had more combined passing yards and interception returned yards than anyone in NFL history. That's the perfect Jameis Winston stat. Guess what? Like, Jameis Winston is not good enough and is certainly not accomplished enough for coaches to put up with that, especially a guy that is a pure backup on a one-year deal. And once we got these the last two games, it's not just this game, it's the last two games where he started piling up more mistakes than big plays, the ratio just gets out of whack and eventually coaches are going to be sick of it. Now, obviously, I think it is a huge issue for a guy like Jerry Jeudy, who's been producing with Jameis Winston, especially you bring up these air yard stats. Like, man, to put it in perspective how Jerry Jeudy's season has gone, he is one of the five receivers right now with 1,000 yards on the season. He was 44th in the NFL in receiving yards in weeks 1 to 8. So like that's the Jameis bump, baby, is going from 44th to one of bump. The only few yes. receivers with 1,000 yards. I just don't know what this is going to look like with DTR, because I think the Browns have gotten the deployment right with Winston or with Jerry Jeudy. We've talked about that, where he's running a lot fewer routes from the slot. They're getting him a lot more on these like off man coverage situations and like single breaking routes where, you know, typically with Jeudy, it's, oh my God, like you're running slants against zone and you're doing all these like the little stupid moves and wasting motions and things like that. No, you want this guy on a runway route where you're just having like a big post or a cross or a dig or something like that. We got one break point and you hit it decisive. And I think he's played, to his credit, he's played very decisive and very confident at those break points. But all those routes I'm talking about requires a quarterback like a Jameis Winston to drop back there and be willing to rip it. And I just don't know that we've seen that from DTR.
Yeah, it's insane. Jerry Jeudy, weeks 1 through 7. Okay, so a 7-game sample here. Jerry Jeudy was on pace for 51 receptions and 646 yards. The fact that he's already over 1,000 is incredible. But since Jameis has taken over, if you just to go on these games, so we're talking about seven game split, 7 games here with Jameis Winston now, he's on pace, Matt, or if this were to hold up, he is on a 7-game pace where if you stretch this out over 17 games, 1,900 receiving yards.
Yeah.
With 119 receptions. That is crazy. You're going from 650 to 1900, bro. That is insane. That, I mean, forget about the Jameis bump. We got to come up with a new word. That's like, that's something else. That is otherworldly. Oh my goodness.
Oh, I've told you, it's like a pump and dump scheme. You know, one of these big, you know,
it's an NFT
companies. Yeah, really? Yeah, totally. All the Jerry Jeudy fantasy managers just got rug pulled, or whatever it is the crypto bros say. That,
oh my God!
We're up, we're going to the moon, and now we're DTR is starting. It's wild. Like we talk about the quarterback carousel next year, there's definitely a part of me that like wants to see, I don't know, Malik Nabers, Garrett Wilson, one of these guys, you know, end up with Jameis Winston for a hot stretch next season. I mean, he'll get benched and it will be what it will be. But for a minute there, I mean, shoot, I'd even take Jacoby Myers. Raiders, what are you doing? You want to get Jacoby Myers to a 1900 yard pace? Probably could. If Jerry Jeudy could do it, Jacoby Myers could definitely do it with Jameis. So, I'm at least interested to see where he signs next year, because I think Jameis is going to end up being one of those guys that finds his way into starting roles and then has stretches just like he did with the Browns. But he'll always burn bright and burn out fast. So, yeah, for the rest of the season, I mean, I don't even know if I don't know if I care about seeing what DTR does in this offense. I'm more interested again on like what is the Browns' plan at quarterback next year?
Aaron Rodgers, let's go.
If there wasn't just so much money involved, like I think then I could see it. It's just like, what are they going to have to do? I really wonder if they end up being a team that like trades up into the top, you know, picks in the draft to get a cheap quarterback. Cause like, that's the only way they get off this ride. They needed to find their like Brock Purdy, you know, maybe that's what they're hoping, that the DTR can just like suddenly turn into a Brock Purdy type for them, where nobody. Yeah. Right. And that's not going to happen. But like, oh yes, we just completely forget about the fact they made this ginormous mistake. Like the 49ers made this ginormous mistake to trade up and take Trey Lance. Nobody even talks about Trey Lance anymore. Cause like Purdy has, and we'll see when his contract situation comes up, but hey, Kirk Cousins going to be available this offseason. Kyle Shanahan has always wanted it. Maybe there's something there. They got to find like a cheap solution to kind of help them deal with the albatross of the Watson contract and whenever they can get off that ride.
I don't know who Sam Darnold's agents are, but if Sam Darnold's agents talk to Cleveland, they need to be fired immediately. Do not go to Cleveland. My God, that would be an absolute disaster. Let's make sure that doesn't happen. Anyways, okay, let's move on.
If I'm Sam Darnold's agents, I'm making up, I don't know, any rumors to get like JJ McCarthy, I don't know, imprisoned or something.
Shit.
just
planting evidence on him or something.
Planting evidence on him or something. Yeah, something like that. Like, because we just like, please want us to stay in Minnesota. But, you know, obviously, I think they want to turn it over to McCarthy. And I think it will be a big talking point in big media. Like, how could you let Sam Darnold go after what he did? And then they're just going to be like, well, we have confidence in the kid and whatever. But if I'm Sam Darnold's agent, he's going to be like, I don't know. He might have robbed a bank. I'm not talking about a violent crime or anything heinous, but like maybe just some sort of planting evidence against him.
To get him
detained. Maybe just detained for a little bit, like hung up at an airport somewhere. Maybe just airport security. I don't know.
Okay. Maybe he's got some THC gummies when he goes to an airport, you know? Who knows?
Yeah.
You
know what I mean? Something harmless. Again, we're not talking anything serious. This is a family. Well, it's not a family friendly show, but it's not a crime pro crime show. Okay. But like, yeah, just something a little simple, like a little weed or something. Yeah. Plant some freaking weed on the guy somewhere. Okay. I mean, that's what I'm doing if I'm Sam Darnold's agent.
That's amazing. Incredible. Okay. All right. Let's break down some of these high profile matchups here before we get out of here. We could rip through some of these, but Terry McLaurin has taken on Philadelphia. Quinyon Mitchell, Darius Slay here for Philadelphia. They've been truly the toughest matchup on the board for outside wide receivers. Quinyon Mitchell has been an absolute he's been a stud. Terry McLaurin now takes on Quinyon Mitchell. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I mean, we've seen this matchup before, right?
We certainly have.
Did not go too well. And what's interesting about the Philadelphia Eagles is that, like, they're such an interesting coverage team. They play the most cover six in the league. They don't play a lot of cover two. You know, they don't play a lot of that. But they play they're pretty high in terms of, I mean, the majority of times they're playing like cover one, cover three. But 16.3% of snaps are cover two. Cover six. So like they just make a really interesting matchup for this Washington offense in particular because they're so good at taking advantage of like single high looks, you know, obviously because they have one receiver who can really get down there and rip it in Terry McLaurin. The connection between him and Jaden Daniels has been one of the most impressive ones to watch this season. And that's been super, super fascinating there. And, you know, look, like last week, it was kind of nice to see him have all this production on the right side of the field. Did you notice this, James? Did you see McLaurin all that production over there?
Of course. How could I not notice that? Of course, you're talking. We've got two alignment bros over here. So yes, no, absolutely. I don't know. You think they do that? You think they mix up the stuff over here with considering how badly he got shut down on the left side last time they saw each other?
I think they have to, man. I mean, I definitely think they have to do it. Just because it just makes no sense at this point. The fact that we have seen Cliff like legitimately do different things, you know, I think that's an important part of this. But yeah, I mean, the Eagles play cover one on 23.5% of their cover snaps. That's according to Fantasy Points data. That's not the majority. It's the second highest that they play. They play a lot of cover three, so still some more single high stuff there. And Terry McLaurin, of course, leads the team with 13 receptions for 150 yards when they see cover one. So I think they're going to have to try to do some of that stuff there in terms of moving him around, trying to get him in the right formations. And yeah, definitely when we talk about like cover three, he's by far the team's leading receiver, 483 yards, 17.3 yards per target. So really some more of those deeper looks there. That's where they're going to, this is going to be on Jaden Daniels to really identify some of this coverage pre and post snap. Like, okay, especially get through line of scrimmage and how much handle does Jaden Daniels have like on that? I think hopefully over the course of the season he's grown more and more in terms of the responsibility, but this, especially because this is a team that runs a lot of no huddle, right? Like Jaden Daniels has more dropbacks out of no huddle than any quarterback. So I think this will be like if Jaden Daniels can get into the right matchups here and like, okay, Terry, we've got a cover three look over here. I'm coming to your side and it's going to be a vertical shot. And we're going to try to push it between these two defenders. That'll be like, okay, we come out of this game thinking like, yeah, that's a big leap for Jaden Daniels.
All right. So then we've got Puka taking on the New York Jets. Sauce Gardner, DJ Reed. DJ Reed, I just checked, was a full go at practice, I believe, today here on Wednesday. As we're recording, he missed last week's game for the New York Jets. And can we be real right now, Matt? We talked about this with Patrick Peterson, but statistically speaking, and I think visually speaking, I think DJ Reed has been a straight up cornerback, a better quarterback than Sauce Gardner. Gardner, I don't know what is going on with Sauce, but he's just not the same. This is not the same player we have seen in the previous two seasons.
Definitely. And it's been a lot of penalties. He's been very grabby, and I think he's been guessing, and I think he's been missing on some of these guesses. And, you know, it's obviously tackling issues too. You have tackling issues and you know, Puka Nacua is coming to town.
Oh boy.
That doesn't feel too good there. Yeah. I mean, the Jets play a lot of man coverage. They're seventh in man coverage rate. They play a lot more single high this year than previous seasons, or certainly at least last season. I don't know if that's more of like Jeff Ulbrich putting his stamp on the defense now with Robert Saleh out. Obviously that's, you know, would be total guesswork on my part, but we'll be really interesting to see like what they concede in terms of the middle of the field to the New York Jets, to the New York Jets, to the Los Angeles Rams, because the Rams are so middle of the field based. At the same time, though, I think, you know, and this is just anecdotally here, I think Sauce really struggles with some of these outbreaking routes, especially if you can get him, you can sell it at the break point. Now, I would say that Puka Nacua is a great, he's a great route runner. He's a good separator, but I wouldn't say he's the most like deceptive route runner, if that makes sense.
Totally.
But if he can just, you know, outwork Sauce at those break points, like sell a go or sell like we're going to, you know, do the dig and we'll run like that blaze out route, I think you could see some big plays from Puka there, because we've talked about this a lot. I think the biggest jump in Puka's game is come at the catch point and also on some of these more outbreaking routes where we've seen him make some big plays along the side.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Headline.
Trent McDuffie for Kansas City has been an absolute stud, and I think he's been quite the bit of a find, because I think he was, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe I thought he was mostly a slot corner, but he's played a lot outside this year, and I don't think there's any question he is clearly Kansas City's best cornerback, and they're just using him all over the yard. Now he gets to go see Nico Collins, who, again, from a yardage perspective, certainly struggled against Jalen Ramsey. How do you see this matchup going?
Yeah, McDuffie's a smaller corner too, but he's a little bit in the same vein of like a tougher physical player, like a Jalen Ramsey. But I think Nico has the size advantage there and things like that. But that's, we've seen Kansas City when a team has like a number one receiver. I'm thinking about the game against New Orleans, and look, that obviously the Saints are a little bit, they have Chris Olave. Chris Olave is a good player, but he's not Nico Collins, but like they just had him track Chris Olave all around the field. Olave also moves around a little bit more than a guy like Nico Collins does, who primarily just sticks at that X receiver position, a little bit of movement, but primarily plays X. So like they just stuck him on there and basically said, like, everybody else go to work on us. And, you know, that worked out pretty well in Kansas City's favor in that particular matchup. So I think we could see something like that here. Now, does that mean CJ Stroud's going away from Nico Collins? Tend to doubt it. Nico Collins is obviously one of the best man-beating receivers in the league. The Chiefs are another man coverage heavy team. They're sixth in man coverage rate overall, but they play a lot of like too high as well. So this is going to be pretty classic. Like, I think we're going to see a lot of Nico Collins, CJ Stroud, deep digs and things like that. What are we going to get from Tank Dell? That's obviously just a question we've got every single week at this point.
Kansas City versus outside wide receivers has limited them to the fewest receptions per game and the second fewest yards. They allow a 53.6% completion rate to wide receivers lined up outside. If that sounds good, it is. It is the second best completion rate in the NFL. So interesting stuff here for Nico Collins against Kansas City.
But they're
City.
On the other end of it with slot receivers, right? I mean, they literally Correct. Allow the most yards per game to slot receivers. The question there is just, I mean, since Steph Diggs has been gone, it's not like anybody is really running a lot of slot routes for this team.
Correct. No, you're right. They're trying to get John Metchie activated here just a little bit is Houston, but... results have been mixed, and honestly, they're actually working in Robert Woods back into the mix here as well. That's how well it's going for John Metchie, guys, is that Robert Woods is working back into the mix in the slot as well, so it hasn't been that great. Tyreek Hill taking on San Francisco. San Francisco's been very stingy on outside wide receivers. Tyreek Hill, before I start this discussion, Tyreek Hill, I don't know if you guys have seen this, but Tyreek Hill tweeted out, "Time for me to go, coach. Time for me to go, coach." Now, there's no comma between "time for me to go, comma, coach," and there's just no comma there. So my thought was, okay, is he saying it's time for me to go, coach, as in like I'm going to go coaching, like Michael Vick was in the news because he's going to be a coach now, right? Or is he saying, hey, Mike McDaniels, it's time for me to go. that is my question. Tyreek Hill with some very interesting tweets today.
And we need a comma. Remember when Skip Bayless tweeted out "all in my ass"? You know, when talking about the Cowboys, and thank God
that's
he used
right.
the comma. That comma yes. was doing a lot of work for
Skip.
Tyreek is doing the opposite here. Like, where is it a comma or there's no comma? I mean, so also, by the way, he's probably just
trolling,
tweeting. Yeah, he's just trolling. Clearly, yeah, that's kind of the deal. But remember, this is a guy who said like he only wanted to play till like 2025 or something. So I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, true. Hey, listen, he's got a very popular Twitch account too. Like, you know, he's out there playing. He loves video games. Let me tell you, man, he loves video games. So, if he just wants to be a full-time streamer, I could see him doing that too. By the way, he followed up that tweet with, quote, "got y'all exactly how I want." So I don't know what to make of it. I think he's trolling, but still it's pretty funny overall. Now, again, he's taken on San Francisco. How do you see that matchup going? Tyreek versus Charvarius Ward and company.
Yeah, the 49ers give up the most points per dropback in man coverage too. So that's pretty interesting just in terms of what's worked for their defense and what hasn't. I think they've struggled with like perimeter runs all season long too. That's been an issue for them. And I mean, really for this team, I think it's interesting when we look at just the way this team has played over the course of the year. It's a lot of like, obviously it's a lot more Jonnu Smith and some of this stuff as opposed to like Tyreek Hill and the guys. So I don't really know what to make of this. And are we going to see Tyreek Hill have a big game? Is Jalen Waddle practice reports? Do we have an update on the Jalen Waddle stuff? Because I know he was dealing with an injury.
True.
I'll tell you what, there's one of my fantasy teams in particular that needs a big Tyreek Hill game. It sounds like Waddle is day to day.
Yeah.
He did not practice on Wednesday. So we'll see what happens with him like on Thursday, Friday. That practice report will certainly be more instructive. But when you look at like when this team faces man coverage, Jalen Waddle has actually been the more productive player. He's 2.18 yards per route run. Tyreek Hill's 1.93, so not low at all. But that's where like, you know, that's where they've really made a lot of big plays for Waddle in particular, is on those man coverage type looks.
Okay, we'll stay in that same game. Juwan Jennings slash Deebo Samuels versus Jalen Ramsey. Jalen Ramsey, I thought, played a pretty good game, obviously, against Nico Collins, just like Patrick Peterson had talked about. Yeah, okay, Nico scored two touchdowns, but less than 20 yards is very impressive for a guy who, before he got injured, was, you know, on pace for just an incredible season, leading the league by a lot in terms of receiving yards. But Juwan Jennings, Deebo, where do you think Jalen Ramsey goes in this one? Like, you know, Debo's still the name, Matt, and I would tend to think Jalen's probably going to try to take him away, but I mean, just from a real life perspective, there's just no question Juwan Jennings has been the better player.
Oh, no question. And this is another matchup too, where like, they play a lot of cover two, do the Miami Dolphins. They're fifth in the NFL in terms of cover two. So that's interesting to consider what that's going to look like, because typically in previous iterations of the San Francisco 49ers offense, it's been all right. Like, when this is the Deebo Samuel stuff. When they get cover two, they try to, you know, put it over the middle to Deebo and give him yards after catch opportunities. I mean, this year they've actually all been much more efficient when they go against cover two. Like, Kittle, Jennings, Ayuk, and Samuel are all over 2 yards per route run against cover two this year. Deebo is actually lowest, though, out of the main four guys. Jennings is right there behind Kittle. Kittle's having like a really good year, and I just don't think it's going to get discussed enough because of the way that the team's season has fallen apart. But yeah, I mean, I think honestly, with what we've seen so far this year, like, the edge has to be given, in my opinion, to Juwan Jennings with just the way he has played over the last few weeks.
Right. Okay. By the way, Miami has been very up and down from a statistical standpoint anyways, versus outside wide receivers. They have limited outside wide receivers to the 10th fewest receiving yards, yet the 67.4% completion rate allowed to the outside, that ranks as the second worst in the NFL. So some efficiency there, but again, it's just it's been a little bit of a mixed bag here with Miami, and I think when you watch them play, I think that sort of plays itself out, doesn't it?
It does. My biggest concern for San Francisco in this game is, can they block it up front? I think Miami's pass rush has really impressed me of late. Same with their run defense too. Again, I say this as somebody that's very invested in Isaac Garendo this week, who I know is dealing with another injury, but I need Garendo to have a big week. Okay. If we're talking about my problems and their run defense. So I've been paying attention a lot to this Dolphins defensive line. I think Calais Campbell is just like ageless. Chop Robinson has played very well. I don't think enough people are talking about Chop Robinson as a rookie pass rusher for them, a guy that was supposed to be a little bit developmental for Miami's defense, but he has come on really strong in the second half of the year. He's put a lot of pressure on opposing quarterbacks. So that's really the biggest question for me, is like Purdy's ability to play under pressure and being able to deliver the ball to outside wide receivers, because that has definitely been a question.
To Matt's point, Isaac Garendo, a hamstring injury coming into this week, I guess. I don't know where he picked that one up from, but a hamstring injury, did not practice on Wednesday. I bring up the hamstring because hammies have been a serious problem for Isaac Garendo dating all the way back to his collegiate days. He has struggled to stay on the football field both collegiately and professionally because of bad hamstrings. Remember, hamstring injuries basically derailed his training camp as well. I don't know, Isaac G. I don't know.
Come on, man. He played 77% of the snaps. He was the only running back to get a carry for the Niners last week. And you're telling me now he's got a hamstring injury?
Bro, first of all, Shanahan, like, and this goes back, this is a generational Shanahan problem, but like, can y'all mix in some other running backs? Like, it doesn't have to be one guy playing like 80-90% of the snaps each and every week. It's so crazy. These guys just run these boys right into the dirt, man. It's all good. Isaac Garendo came into last week nursing an injury, and as you mentioned, there was no other running back that even had a carry. That's so crazy to me.
Yeah, at least they got Deebo his, like, you know, ceremonial carries or whatever. Do you think Deebo even wants to be running the ball for this team anymore? I doubt it. But
he's over it, dude.
I think he's over it. I think he's over it, and I think they're over him. That felt like in the beginning of that Thursday night game where they basically were like kind of trying to get him going early in the in the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
That felt actually like the inverse of it. Typically, it's like, all right, our top receiver's struggling. You know, he's tweeting about I'm not struggling. I'm just not getting the ball. they throw him a couple passes right away, and he like dropped both of them. That felt more of like the head coach being like, no, see. Not my fault. Again, top receiver struggling. Let's get him a couple screens, get him in the flow of the game.
Totally.
That stuff. With Shanahan, 100%. I always imagine it's the opposite. Like, nah, yeah. Nah, uh-uh. Actually, this is him.
Those are some angry play calls, you know?
Angry play. Probably saying to Brock, like, hey, Brock, if you could just like throw it a little harder than normal so that maybe it's a messy weather game, maybe he slips out of his hand. I'm trying to prove a point here, buddy. We'll get him on the later drives, but on this first one, throw him a real uncatchable ball.
I mean, shoot, man, that one he dropped where he probably was going to turn on the afterburners and walk that in for a touchdown, and he dropped that pass. Oh man, the fact that he dropped that pass after tweeting what he tweeted was that was unfortunate for Debo.
Yeah, I mean, he got community notes, bro. He got community notes. They threw it up there. He said, I'm not struggling. I'm just not getting the ball. And then the community notes were like, no, he leads the team in drops. He is struggling. And then, yeah, for him to come out and drop. I mean, Juwan Jennings had two drops in that game, too.
The weather was terrible.
The weather was terrible. But, yeah, that felt like some vindictive play calls. 3-7 targets, 16 yards for Debo Samuel against the Rams. Not great.
Ouch. All right, so there you go. That's the show. We will be back with you guys next week. Man, you guys are in the fantasy semis. Not me, though. Not me. I'm just chilling at home. I'm just playing DFS now. Sorry, it's all bud. Good.
I'll let you know how it goes.
It was an absolute cruel season for your boy over here, but no one cares about that, so it's all good. Anyways, we got to go. For Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. Remember, it's never too late to chase your dreams. All right, peace.